You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
It just took on a life of its own. And over the years, I found myself in all sorts of weird situations with weird people and having these great conversations. And I keep pinching myself thinking, man, like the 16-year-old Andy would never think that he's sitting here trying to talk to a neuroscientist or this basketball player or a comedian or like, you know, these music heroes of mine as well. And it's just, it's been an absolute ride and incredible. And I think over the years, I've certainly become better at having conversation and asking questions and being more curious about people. So it's been great. And I think as a bit of a byproduct, it's certainly helped the band in more recent years as well. People have discovered the podcast now first, then thought, okay, what's this band he keeps talking about? May as well go and have a listen to a song. Oh, they're not that bad. Okay, I might go and buy a CD or a t-shirt. And it's like, yes, okay, cool. So it's working in that way as well.
Hey, what's up, Vox and Hops heads? I'm Matt, the vocalist of Cryptopsy and the host of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, brought to you by Sound Talent Media, where I sit down with fellow metal musicians to talk about their lives, music, and craft beer. I hope you had a glorious weekend. I most certainly did. This Vox and Hops episode is presented by Heavy Montreal. Heavy Montreal is Montreal's premier metal promoter. They put on a bunch of sick metal shows all year long, but they also put on one of North America's best metal festivals. And I say this, and it's the absolute truth. I have played just about every festival across the globe, and I gotta say that Heavy Montreal is up there with the best of them. I am super stoked to have Heavy Montreal behind the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. Now, before we jump into today's episode, I would just like to ask you to follow the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast on the podcast platform of your choice. But more than that, you know what would be amazing? If you could rate it and write a review. Why do I want you to do that? It's because when people are looking for a new podcast to listen to, what do? They go down, they scroll down, and they check out those reviews. If those reviews are favorable, they will most probably give that podcast a chance. So if you were to write a review and encourage someone else to become a future Vox and Hops head, that would be something that I would truly appreciate. Now, on today's episode, I am with Andy Dowling of the band Lord. He also has a sick podcast that I had the pleasure of being on earlier this year called The Andy Social Podcast. Get ready, everyone. This is Vox and Hops, episode number 293.
I warn you, what you are about to hear is very disturbing indeed.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Today, I'm with Andy Dowling of the Andy Social Podcast. Nod to the old school. He also plays bass and does vocals in the band Lord. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me on the Vox and Hops podcast. It's been a long time coming.
Yes, I'm very happy to return the favor because you had me on the Andy Social podcast, I want to say 8 months ago. So it's a long time coming. I apologize it took so long to return the favor. I had a great time on your podcast. You've been having a bunch of great guests. You just hit 300 episodes, so congrats on that.
Thank
truly,
you.
Truly impressive. And I've been looking forward to having a chat with you.
Sounds good. Let's dive into it.
Right into it. Vox and Hops is all about hanging out with my metal friends and talking about their lives, music, and craft beer. So what beer are you going to be drinking tonight that we will be sharing virtually?
Yes. Well, I'm doing Dry July, so which is a challenge. I love my beers, but luckily now there's been a bit of a, I'm sure it's the same in North America. There's a lot of 0% alcohol beers on the market now. So this is one of the more popular ones called Nort. And it's a refreshing ale, and it's probably one of the healthiest beers as well on the market. It's got low carbs and hardly any sugar as well. So I can drink lots and lots of them and not feel guilty about it. So the body is a temple. So I'll be drinking lots of these.
Good for you. Good for you. Talk to me about Dry July. What brought you to that decision? Is that something that happens in your life regularly? I did a sober February, and that's something that is typical. There's a typical like dry January, sober February. I have never heard of a Dry July.
Yeah, I think I might get the origins a little bit incorrect, but here in Australia, Dry July usually is linked in with a charity. I'm trying to think of who the organization is, but usually what they do is you can sponsor people and they'll raise money for various cancer research for different types of cancer. So you can select a type of cancer and link it to a particular hospital in Australia as well, and raise money for those research units to for anything related to the cancer topic. This year, I didn't bother with the charity aspect. I went totally selfish and just went on a bit of a health kick this month. But usually each year, I usually do a charity thing and raise a bit of money for it. But this year, I thought I'd go on the down low and not make a big song and dance about it, and just go, hey, it might be a good idea just to ease up on the beers. I love my beers, as you know, and I thought we need a break every once in a while. But these days, it's so much easier to have a break and still enjoy the social aspect of it. And even like the taste of these beers now are just, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I think I'll always gravitate towards the ones with alcohol in them. They always taste better. But man, these ones on the market now are just, they're insane. They're getting closer and closer to the real deal.
What a time to be alive. What a time to be a craft beer enthusiast and trying to be a healthy craft beer enthusiast. I remember last time we spoke together, you talked about you enjoy walking very much. You do massive walks, lots and lots of kilometers. Are you still up to that to keep yourself healthy on top of this dry July?
Yeah, I've been trying. I've been a little bit slack the last couple of months, but when I got to the beginning of July, I thought I need to make a real effort. I want to see the results. I want to see if there's something at the end of June to see where I was at versus the end of July. Is my life going to dramatically change with the reduction of alcohol and some clean living, you know? And so I've been doing a lot of walks. I love counting my steps, and I've got the Strava app. So I'm watching my little map and as I walk around the place. And I live in like probably one of the best places in the world. I live right in the middle of Sydney. I'm on Darling Harbour. And so for me, like I can just walk along the wharfs, along the harbour. I can see the harbour bridge, like 2 minute walk from my house. And so it's cool. It's not like walking around some industrial area or suburbia or anything like that. I've got these amazing sights. So there's definitely a lot of motivation to get out and walk around. So yeah, trying to do the right thing.
That's right. Did you take the pictures of the before at the end of June with the no shirt? Because and then you have to do that, the before and after. That's when you'll see the true results.
Oh, I'm too scared to do that. I'm too scared. When people do that, I have so much. So like you got to give them credit. Like I think it's so brave for people to go.
You don't have to post them. You keep them in your phone. But.
Oh, no, even for yourself. Even for yourself. Just for me to stare at my own body in a photo, I'll be like, oh, God, Andy, come on.
What I did notice when I did Sober February is that I slept way better. The quality of sleep, whether or not that I'm sleeping more hours, it's just the hours that I was getting of sleep was far better quality sleep.
Yeah, I'm getting the same, and I'm sleeping a lot more as well. And now it's that balance of not oversleeping because I'm really enjoying it. So now I've got to try and rein it back and go, okay, come on, Andy, you still got some things to do. Try and be productive, man. Come on, you can do it.
On my right side, I'm going to be enjoying one of Vox and Hops' Brutal North America brews. I haven't had this one yet, so I'm excited to share it with you. It's a Brand of Sacrifice and Third Moon's collab called Lifeblood. It's a double IPA with lactose, 8% ABV. For a moment, I don't know if it's still there. It was the number one rated beer in Ontario on Untappd, which is very cool. Third Moon are one of North America's most exciting new breweries. Very young brewery. They're probably 15 months old, 14 months old, and they're just killing it. I'm going to crack this, and I want to hear about your very first beer. Do you remember the first beer that you drank, Andy?
Yeah, I think... I don't know if it's a common theme in Australia, but I think a lot of Australians discover beer from a grandparent or maybe an uncle or maybe their dad. And it's usually at a very questionable age, very, very young. And it's usually, hey, have a sniff of this beer, or you get a photo. I'm pretty sure there's a photo of me with like a birthday cake, and I'm pretty sure I'm in a nappy and I'm holding like a beer bottle. So not that I was a big drinker at that age, but certainly got accustomed to the smell and I guess probably the taste. But I think it was probably in my teens where I had my first beer, and I remember stealing a beer out of my dad's fridge, and I think it was a Tiger beer from Singapore. And I remember I must have been going to a friend's place. So I quickly grabbed it and just ran down the street with it. I remember drinking it and just going, this is absolutely disgusting. It's such a horrible taste. How can anybody drink this sort of stuff? And then not long down the track, like anything, you build a tolerance for it. and you go, oh, this is actually really amazing.
It's like extreme metal.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, it's not just a love at first sight or love at first taste or listen. You gotta build to appreciate it. So I think that was probably my first beer that I can recall.
Amazing. Cheers for hanging out with me. I'm gonna taste this lifeblood. Super haze. It's amazing. It smells gorgeous, tropical fruits.
And a massive congrats on your beer empire that you're creating as well. It's lovely to see you crack a can with your logo on it. I mean, that's dreams, isn't it? I mean, that's what you're aiming for. It's incredible.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very proud of what I accomplished with Brutal North America. And this is amazing. You would never guess this is an 8% brew. It's a sweet, tropical, juicy, creamy, amazing Third Moon, super hyped up brewery. I had to pair them with a super hyped up band, and Brand of Sacrifice are that exact band. So I'm very happy. And thank you for the kind words. I would like to hear about your craft beer journey. When did you discover craft beer? What would have been that beer that was more than that tiger that you stole from your dad's fridge, chugging while you're running down the street in disgust? At what point did you realize beer could be more and could be actually something enjoyable?
Yeah, I think craft beer hasn't been around, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't been around long at all. And I think it's only been in the last 8 or 9 years that that craft beer has really sort of taken off in Australia, and more so probably in the last 3 or 4 years. I mean, it's just incredible. It was only a few weeks ago that a few friends and myself went on a brewery tour in the suburbs of Sydney, and actually not far from where you've played in the past, the Factory Theatre in Marrickville.
There's about
6 or 7 craft breweries all in that area within walking distance.
How did I miss that?
Oh, I think you were just a little bit early, but when you come back, we'll take you there. But it's just incredible to see what it is now. But I can't recall exactly. I think one of the crazes that we did have at one point was the low-carb beers were really popular to begin with. And I think that was the first sort of path towards something that was just a little bit abnormal to what people would expect. I don't know what it's like in North America, but in Australia, our history of beer drinking has been very like lager beers, and we would say like no frills, nothing fancy. And there's a very small range of beers. They're not the greatest tasting beers, but that's just what our grandfathers drank, our fathers drank, everybody for generations. And so when the low carb beers came in, I think that sort of opened the gates for flavor and different variations and styles. And then I think it's almost like, and I'm sure we've spoken about this before in the past, it's kind of like with the artwork and the labeling and the branding around all these beers, I think that's built up a hype and a motivation for people to try and do as many unique things around beer as possible now. And I think that's what makes it exciting. It's not just about, you know, the taste, which is obviously the most important thing, but, you know, seeing the stories and the narratives around these brands and their artwork and the way that they're publicized and promoted, it's really cool. And as a musician myself and somebody who's really like, you know, DIY with all of our PR and our promotion, I look at what the craft beer industry is doing. I'm like, oh, there's so many cool ideas here. There's so many awesome things. And you're a prime example of this, of bringing the worlds together. So, that was a very long-winded, I don't even know if I answered the question. I just got excited about talking about craft beer. So I'll put it back to you, Matt.
Beer is a beautiful thing. I love it when we get excited when we talk about beer. And it is true that the branding, the showcasing of art on the outside of the can or on the label, as well as inside with the product itself, is very important in craft beer. And that really ties into the music industry as well. So we could be the best band in the world, but if you don't have, you know, all the frills and the proper stage show, the proper performance, it might not be as accepted, you know, or it might not have gone off as well. You know, if Kiss didn't have all that what they had going on, back in the day, they might not have become one of the biggest bands on the planet.
That's right. 100%. 100%.
And Ghost following suit 100% on that too. But let's talk about the soundtrack of your youth. When you were growing up in your parents' or guardians' house, what music was playing? When you were not in control of the music, what music did your parents or guardians listen to?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So my dad is a big folk music fan. John Denver, Cat Stevens, Simon and Garfunkel, all that kind of stuff. He liked a bit of the Beatles as well. There's a little bit of Rolling Stones, but it almost seemed like it was a little bit too heavy for him. I think he really liked that hippie vibe. And when I look at some photos of my dad in his earlier years, he definitely lapped up the hippie era a bit. There's some shaggy hair there and some interesting facial hair that was going on at the time. And he's really immersing himself in and James Taylor and stuff like that, the Carpenters and it's quite funny because I absolutely hated that music, especially going into my teens, bellying and starting to listen to heavier music. And, but it's only been in recent years that I've gone back and heard these songs again and understood the craftsmanship of the songwriting and how great some of these songs are, and getting over myself, getting over what my image is and who I think I am, and just going, hey, no, these songs are actually really good. And every once in a while, I'll send a text to my dad. Oh, hey, just listen to this John Denver song. It's not bad, hey. He's like, told you.
It's crazy how that happens when you go back to your youth music, and then when you were like, I hated it. It was horrible. And then you're like, oh, I understand. I finally understand. I don't know whether the maturity comes into it or an openness. I don't know where that comes from, but it's a beautiful thing to see that cyclical listening pattern come around. And it happens with everyone that I speak to, and it happens to myself even. I was listening to some Richard Marx.
Hey, nice.
And I was like, this is really good. But in my teen years, I wouldn't have done it. It would have definitely not resonated with me as much as the new metal Matt wanted to hear. I was definitely a new metal child. I've talked up a lot about that.
Well, my mom loved Hazard by Richard Marx, that sort of 92 hit. And I remember that getting played in the car stereo over and over again. I think we had a best of compilation from that year. And so Hazard was on there. So I knew all the words, but it was a bit cringy because my mom liked it. But looking over at my CD shelf over there, I've got 4 Richard Marx CDs. I've actually really come to appreciate his stuff. And once again, they're great. They're great songs. It's great songwriting, and there's some amazing hooks. So it's funny. And I'm sure from a parent's point of view, it would be amusing for them to see their rebellious son sort of come back home, so to speak, and go, yeah, now you've opened your eyes. Okay, no worries. Okay, all good. We won't make you feel silly. Come back.
I want to hear about your first live music experience. You remember the first show that you went to go see?
I saw a punk band called Tumbleweed and saw them play at an in-store music shop in Brisbane as a kid. And I remember, and this music shop, so for any Aussies who are tuning in, this shop was called Skinny's, and it was a really sort of really important music store for Australian music. So a lot of people in the 90s would remember this store, even if they weren't living in Brisbane at the time. And this is a way that a lot of us discovered music for the first time. So I remember this one day walking in there and the band playing at the back of the room. And for me, I was a Metallica kid, anything that's not this sucks, And so I walked in, this punk band was playing at the back, and I'm like, oh, this sounds crap, But I hung around, and this was the first time I got to see a band play live. And so I think I started to appreciate just the noise, the volume, and seeing people playing together in that cohesive unit, even though it was punk and it was probably a little bit rough around the edges. They were all on the same page, and I appreciated that. And I don't think it was too far down the track after that I saw the Chili Peppers, actually. I saw them play with Crazy Town.
Wow.
Of all acts.
Wow.
I remember Crazy Town getting booed off the stage. So even back then, this is when they had whatever that hit was.
Butterfly, which is a sample of Chili Peppers, no? Or it's the bass line that comes from that one of their tracks.
Yeah, yeah. So that was at the height of that song being out, and they still got booed off the stage. and someone threw a shoe up at the singer when he was sort of doing his rap or whatever. But I remember enjoying that. I wasn't a massive Chili Peppers fan, but they, and I think this was just, it must have been Californication or something like that.
I think the timing lines up, yeah.
Yeah, so they were probably my main things. And then I think after that, I started to really get the itch for live music. I didn't, my parents were never into like going to shows. So I really started to go to shows when I was a little bit older, in my late teens. But after that, it was straight into seeing AC/DC, seeing Kiss, seeing Pantera, and just like, I just dove in there, and it just got heavier and heavier.
No matter what show came to town, you were there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like camping out the front and like being first in the doors and being first at the barrier.
Wow.
You know, and having like the little, you know, pre-digital cameras, having the disposable camera,
yeah,
trying to take photos and dodge security, you know. But some good memories of those earlier days, just being obsessed about this new thing that you discovered and not understanding it, like not being jaded by it, or not sort of getting all techie and seeing what the guitarist is doing or the vocalist is doing, and or seeing all the stuff ups. You're just immersed with this amazing experience that's just happening around you, the people, the sound. Going home with the ring in the ears, waking up the next day and feeling like you're hungover because of just this noise assault that you've had. It's crazy. It's great memories.
That sounds amazing. I miss it so much.
Yeah. I was like, it's been a while since I've had that feeling.
I do have a Crazystown story. It's a very short anecdote.
Yeah.
I was walking down St. Catherine Street, which is the main street here in Montreal, at the height of their success, and we have this very famous strip club called Super Sex, Club Super Sex. I don't think it's open anymore, but right as I was passing that, out walked all of Crazy Town. And I was in a band at the time, and I think we had just won this battle of the band, so we were on this high, and I like stopped them and I said hi to them and I told them we just won this battle of the bands, but they were super nice to us. It was a quick exchange and then we went on our way, but they were actually really nice to a very young, probably a little bit intoxicated band, but they were probably a little bit intoxicated as well, and we're probably very happy because they were leaving a nice strip club in Montreal.
Oh, good on them. Bad music, great guys.
That night. How about your first time on stage?
Yeah. So I was filling in for a rock band when I was living in Brisbane called Mobster, and they played sort of 80s, sort of cheesy 80s rock sort of stuff, a bit of Van Halen kind of esque. So a bit of Kiss sort of influence. And I filled in for a show with them, and that was the first time I ever got on stage properly and played. And I remember having the old jelly legs and going, oh God, what am I doing? People are looking at me. And then it wasn't, I did a couple of things sort of in Brisbane, but not long after that, probably 6 months later, I moved to Sydney and joined what is now Lord. And
wow.
And it was really getting thrown in the deep end, because my next significant time on stage was playing, I don't know, in front of a few hundred people in Sydney, which was our first official gig as Lord, because we used to be called Dungeon beforehand. And I knew about the jelly legs thing leading up to it, and I was getting nervous about it. There's a lot of pressure on expectation. And my housemate at the time said, I've got a great idea. Put some deep heat on your legs. I don't know if you guys have got it in North America, but that sort of,
yeah, it's like a you rub it when your muscles are sore.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really strong. It's got a burning sensation. And he said, rub it on your legs, and the heat that you feel on your legs will be a distraction. So you won't have the jelly legs. Like, you won't be as nervous, because it'll just be a nice distraction, mental distraction. So he said he's done it before. Works a treat. I'm like, okay, no worries. So night of the show, we're ready to go. And I'm panicking, like I'm just so nervous about it. So what I did was I put the deep heat on my legs, but I must have put half of the tube, half of the contents on my legs. So I get on stage and my legs are on fire. And then as I'm getting ready to start, I can hear people in the front row going, "What's that smell? Can you smell deep heat?" And then before I knew it, the room just started to smell like deep heat. And I'm like, oh, I hope no one finds out. And like, no way they're going to find out. But you know, underneath these jeans are like these red hot legs just covered in like this gel, disgusting gel. But it worked. I mean, apart from the distracting, you know, legs on fire and the crowd being confused by the smell, I got through the show and didn't collapse and managed to pull it off. So I thank my housemate, but yeah, I went a little bit overboard with that one, but it ended up creating a great memory. So that's probably my first main proper show on stage. So yeah, it'll forever be etched in my mind.
deep heat on the rider, and there's definitely worst smells that bands have permeated a room with. So.
Oh yeah. Since then, yeah, we've had many scents waft through either from stage or from the crowd onto the stage. So mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've toured with Watain, so it's. let's talk about podcasting. You've been doing this a very long time. You just hit 300 episodes. Talk to me about why you podcast, how you got into it. Why are you a podcaster?
Yeah, I think at the time, I mean, I've been doing podcasting now, or as of next month, as of August, it'll be 6 years.
It's amazing.
Doing podcasting and done my main podcast, the Antisocial Podcast, but then also done a number of other projects, podcast relating projects along the way as well. But at the time when I started, I think the band, like our band being Lord, we were in a bit of a, I wouldn't say a lull, but things were just a little bit quiet. We're in between albums. We hadn't quite got into the studio to start writing or recording. There was no shows. And I think some of the guys were a little bit burnt out at the time as well. So I started, and I think this is probably the first real time that we'd had this period, this break. And so for me, I'm like, oh, what happens if the band doesn't exist anymore? Like, what am I going to do with my life, you know? And so I started thinking about the old diversification, like how can I do a few other things and keep stimulated when times are a bit quiet. And I just around that time just started listening to podcasts and started listening to these really cool stories and people having chats. And it felt like I was there listening in as people, these long form podcasts that we all do now. And I just thought maybe I could try something like that. And one of the other things that I found at the time was that I was really frustrated with the level of the depth of conversation that I was having with my friends. I found that the only time I was having conversations with them was at a show, at a gig. And it was usually like 4 or 5 beers in, and you're not really going to have a deep and meaningful conversation when you get to that point. There's a lot of loud noises. It's fun. It's great. But, you know, you're only going to scrape the surface. And so I wanted to get better at having conversations and learning more about people, not just my friends, but then just anybody I found interesting. And now that's a fairly common theme now with a lot of podcasts. But it just took on a life of its own. And over the years I found myself in all sorts of weird situations with weird people and having these great conversations. And I keep pinching myself thinking, man, like the 16-year-old Andy would never think that he's sitting here trying to talk to a neuroscientist or this basketball player or a comedian or like, you know, these music heroes of mine as well. And it's just, it's been an absolute ride and incredible. And I think over the years, I've certainly become better at having conversation and asking questions and being more curious about people. So it's been great. And I think as a bit of a byproduct, it's certainly helped the band in more recent years as well. People have discovered the podcast now first, then thought, okay, what's this band he keeps talking about? May as well go and have a listen to a song. Oh, they're not that bad. Okay, I might go and buy a CD or a t-shirt. And it's like, yes, okay, cool. So it's working in that way as well.
That ends the web of connections. That's something I've learned from Vox and Hops. When you have someone on the podcast, you have an in-depth conversation with someone, you become closer to that person and somewhat friends, a good, like, it's better than LinkedIn, you know what I mean? Like, you can hit the person up afterwards and shoot them an idea. They can say no, and that's fine, but most of the time they say yes. So a lot of good has come from me starting the podcast, so I imagine it's the same thing for you.
Yeah, it's opened up a lot of opportunities, even just to expose people that normally aren't part of the metal community to mm-hmm. some of our music. That's been really powerful. And then some of the people, like even just, you know, I mean, we're a great example, the two of us, you know, reaching out and you know, you jumping on my podcast and having a chat, and then,
you know, you build a connection, then we realize that there's a lot of people that we both know. And so those mutual friends, that always helps. And it just, the network continues to expand. And at the very least, it builds a global network of friends. And anything on top of that's a bonus. So it's super cool. And I had that as a touring musician. You know, you could get around the world and end up in a city and you'd be able to work out somebody that you could potentially hit up and go, hey, do you want to go for a beer or something like that? But with the podcasting, it's sort of taken it to another level again, where, you know, really I can get around to a lot of places around the world now and just shoot a DM to somebody and potentially have a friend in that area, which is just blows my mind. It's super cool.
How do you get your guests? How do you seek out your guests? Is it just you going and hitting them up? That's what happened with us. You just shot me a message. Do you work with publicists? How do you go about doing this? Because you have such an eclectic guest range. They're not just metal musicians. You mentioned there's a neuroscientist, there's basketball players, there's comedians. There's a vast array of people that you've had on your podcast.
It's a mixture of everything. I find that everybody's got a different preference when it comes to receiving contact. And I guess it depends on their history and their own online presence as well. I think, you know, the people who are very active themselves on social media and engaging with their audience, it's easier to flick them a DM, whether it be on Instagram or Twitter or even Facebook. And that usually works. It's probably the most common way of doing it. But some of the people that I don't have any prior sort of mutual connection or any prior engagement with, then I'll go through the formal channels on the website, send them an email, or there might be a publicist or a manager that I'll have to go through. They're usually the hardest ones because they're the gatekeepers and they'll start sizing you up and thinking, okay, well, is this actually going to be a benefit to my client? And then they'll start quizzing you and you have to validate your podcast. And it's like, oh God, like just get me through to the person because I'm sure they just want to talk. But it's been good. It's been interesting to see how people respond to the requests and how it's changed. I think people are more familiar with podcasts now. So that's been easier in a way. Whereas years ago, you had to try and explain what a podcast was to a lot of people. That was a bit of a hurdle that you had to jump over. And I'm also seeing that, you know, I get hit up with a lot of publicists now requesting for people to be on the podcast as well. And I try not to do a lot of the usual press stuff, the press campaigns. And I think that's just more a personal preference of mine, but it's been interesting to have some really cool people come back on a second occasion, their PR people, and say, hey, this person really enjoyed the first time they're on the podcast. They'd love to do another one. And I think when I get stuff like that, you kind of go, okay, that validates that I must be doing something reasonably something good. Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you have like a guest bucket list of guests that you would like to have on the podcast? With 300 episodes, I'm sure that you've hit a bunch of them, but there must still be some white whales out there that you would love to have on the podcast.
Yeah, the most obvious one for anyone who knows me, and they know exactly who I'm going to say, is our greatest Australian export of all time from a singing point of view is John Farnham. So John Farnham is my white whale. I'm a massive fanboy of his. I think he's probably one of the greatest singers ever. And I think the biggest disservice he ever did was not join a metal band in the 80s because his pipes are just they're made for metal. So I've always wanted to quiz him about that sort of stuff and humor him with some, and he has a good personality. He's a really good, he's got a great public persona. But he is somebody that never does interviews. If he does one, it's usually mainstream TV or something like that. Once in a blue moon, he's a very private person. So, I don't like my chances with that, but I've got a few ideas to try and be sneaky about it and maybe catch them off guard and try to dangle a few carrots to make it look like it's worth their while to do it. But we'll see what happens. But I think also like a lot of those guys that I grew up with, like that are idol in the metal world, like, you know, those typical, they're not overly sort of surprising people, but like, you know, the Metallica guys and the Slayer guys and the Anthrax guys, the big four dudes. But even like the, you know, people from like Testament, and I'm just thinking of all the guys that I grew up with, like Creator and Destruction, all those bands like Schmier and Millet and all those guys. But I'm always hesitant to reach out to these types of people, especially in the music space, because I know what it's like to do press. I know what it's like to answer questions.
And I'm so self-conscious that I'm going to ask them stuff that they've answered a million times. And I want to, if I ever get any of these guys on the podcast, I want them to walk away from it and go, that was one of the best conversations I've ever had. And it doesn't feel like it's a run-of-the-mill thing that I've forgotten about. It's just one of the last 100 interviews that I've done over the past however long. And I think maybe it's just me getting, I've got to get out of my own head a little bit, but it'd be a pretty wild to have some of the, those childhood Andy idols on the podcast. I think that would be a little bit of a Twilight Zone mind freak sort of moment for me.
Absolutely. How did you find that the pandemic affected your podcast?
It's good and bad. Good that it's been easier to track people down. People aren't on tour, people aren't away being busy doing things, and they got a little bit more time. And I think as people have become a little bit more accustomed to technology and working out how to connect and do these types of things, people are more open to doing it, because I'm sure you've had it in the past. There's a lot of interesting moments where people are trying to do a podcast and they haven't quite worked out how to plug things in, or maybe they're doing a podcast out on the side of the road, or I don't know. Anyway,
that is
lots happened. Of stuff like that. Yeah. it's been good in a way to be able to connect with a lot more people in that sense. I think the challenging part is that people's routines that they connected with podcasting. So commutes to work, going to the gym, getting out and doing things that would involve them listening to a podcast, where a lot of the world at times over the past 18 months have been locked down. I don't think podcasts have been consumed to the extent that they were pre-pandemic. I think as the world starts to reopen, then we might, it'll get better. But I certainly have seen a little bit of a dip in that listenership. And when I reach out to individual people who have been really closely connected with the podcast from a listener point of view, it's the same story. It's just a case of, oh man, like I'm at home. Like I'd rather watch something, than listen to a podcast. And I guess video podcasting's probably really taken off, I think, because of that. So people can sit on the couch and watch it. But from an audio only perspective, I think that's probably been a little bit of a challenge. But it's still, you still get them. There's still people listening and enjoying it. So it's been a very interesting sort of social experiment, just to see how people react and change their habits and behaviors because of what's been going on.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when they go back to work, if they go back to work, because a lot of companies now realize they don't even need the office space because everyone did the job for a year and a half at home. So we'll see.
That's it. Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. I imagine people will still go back to listening to podcasts, and we are people that put out a lot of content. So I always wonder if they can actually keep up with what I'm putting out.
Well, I've had that challenge myself. And thing that has kept me going when it comes to volume is that the great thing about podcasts for the most part is that they're relatively evergreen, in the sense that you can listen to something, months down the track and still get some value and enjoyment out of it. It's not too stuck in that period of time. Or if anything, sometimes it provides a really good time capsule of what was going on at that moment as well. So it gives you some insight from a different angle. And for me, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of competition. And as long as they exist and people can find them and they can access them, then that's the most important thing. And one of the biggest thrills I get out of doing podcasting is having somebody message me and laugh at something that a guest has said or I've said that was like 3.5 years ago. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Yeah. I have no idea what I said. And then I start to freak out. I'm like, oh my God, like, what the hell did I say? I've been speaking so much over the years. But that people are going through and digging through that back catalog. It's sort of like discovering a band and you go, oh, I've got to go and listen to the old albums and see where these hidden gems are, these deep cuts. And it's kind of like that with podcasting. People go back and find these cool guests and go, oh, I'll give that a listen. And it's wild to get feedback from those people.
That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Hey, what's up, Vox and Hopsheads? I just want to take a little moment about Cryptopsy's upcoming tours. That's right. I'm talking about the Scream of Perseverance tour and our headliner dates that coincide with that tour called As Summer Burns. The Scream of Perseverance tour is kicking off at the end of May and runs all the way until the end of June. We are supporting the mighty Death to All. We are going all over the United States and we are hitting some of Canada. So excited to be honoring the legendary music of Death alongside amazing musicians that performed on these albums. Even more stoked to be doing some headliner dates in some cities that I've actually never played in. If you are planning to come to any of these shows, you should definitely grab your tickets by going to voxandhops.com/summer, and you will be able to grab all of your tickets there. That's voxandhops.com/summer. Do it, people. Come hang out with me. Enjoy life, metal, and craft beer in your hometown. Come to a show. We're going to have a great time. Now, enough about all of that. Let's get back to the episode. Let's dance into Lord. Brand new EP, Undercover Volume 1, came out April 2nd. Dumminess Entertainment dropped that. It's a very cool metal EP, all about covers of songs that typically shouldn't be covered in metal, notably Savage Garden, but it did very, very well. It was the number one on the independent Australian artist charts, which is, so congrats for that. It's very impressive. I think it was number 7 on another Australian chart. Is that correct?
Yeah. It's this is one of those unexpected moments where, like a lot of bands during the pandemic, trying to do something to get some content out to keep that momentum going. And we've been a band that's done cover songs for years, always recorded them. They've been bonus tracks on, you know, German releases or Japanese releases or whatever. And so people go, oh, I want to hear that cover song you did. And it's like, oh, it's on the Japanese version. So if you can track that down, then go and listen to it. Otherwise, sorry, like that's the only place you can find it. So we thought, well, let's get them all together as a compilation. There's a lot of songs. And then we decided to record a couple of new ones as well. One of them being that Savage Garden song, To the Moon and Back. And I wouldn't say it was meant to be a throwaway release. It was just meant to be something to keep things moving. And just to amuse our audience, our crew of supporters, from over the years. And, it's got a little bit of fire behind it. It just started to really pick up. We had Darren Hayes from Savage Garden tweet about it, and that sort of caused a bit of a stir. So that gave me an opportunity to go on the PR bandwagon and milk that one. And I think just before, or just on release date, I got an email from an editor from an Australian music publication saying, you guys are more than likely going to crack the ARIA charts. So the difference between the independent charts and the ARIA charts is that the ARIA charts is everybody, major labels, everything. And they said, oh, you might crack the top 20. And so the last album that we put out, Fallen Idols, in 2019, we got to number 20, which was crazy. It was just unexpected. We had no idea this was even a thing that could be possible. And, so they said, oh, you might crack the top 20. I thought, oh, wow, that's pretty, pretty cool. And then the charts got released and we got to number 7. And so this is for Australian artists only, but it was Australian artists that are also on major labels. So other people on that list were, I'm just trying to think of bands that would be familiar in North America in particular, but like Cold Chisel was on there, Jimmy Barnes, The Wiggles were on there.
Wiggles.
The Wiggles are always in the charts. Yeah. It's insane. But we're in there with these artists and these known brands, you know, and it was just an absolute spin out. And then we got, and we haven't publicized this one because it doesn't sound as impressive, but we got to number 53 in the overall ARIA chart. So that includes everybody, like Lady Gaga, Foo Fighters, everybody. And I think that week alone, we got better than the Foo Fighters, which was like, yes, suck it, Dave Grohl. We're better than you at least one week. So it's been really good. It's been an absolute spin out. And, it's been a great way to give back to the people who support us by giving them the collection of songs together. We were really strategic about making a lot of it exclusive to Bandcamp and just having sort of only a small section of them available on streaming platforms and all that sort of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. It was a little bit of creativity to try and get this out. And since then, I mean, there's been a lot of bands doing covers, which we sort of put up our hands straight away and said, hey, we're not doing anything original here, guys. Like, we know everybody's doing the covers thing at the moment. I think since we've put it out, there's been a lot more bands also releasing covers. So I think that's going to be the theme for 2021 is, you know, let everyone celebrate music and cover some fun songs. And then 2022, get some more studio albums out.
Back on tour. You should definitely do a video for this Savage Garden song.
Yeah, we did. It came out a couple of weeks ago.
But you should have gotten the dude from Savage Garden to be a part of it.
Oh man, we were tempted. So apparently Darren lives in LA now. So we're like, maybe we could like get him to film something.
Yeah.
And send it over and everything. Oh. But what we did is we tried to the original video clip. It's like they just went for a vibe. There was no storyline or anything. They were just sort of like in this sort of ambient, dark, moody vibe in the city sort of thing with the song. And it kind of fitted the song. And so we decided to do the same thing. There's not a great big storyline associated with it. There's a little bit of a storyline, but we filmed it all in Sydney, in King's Cross, in the middle of the city. We made it really gritty and dark and moody. And tried to capture some of that original vibe from the video. So Darren Hayes has seen it, and he said it brought back a lot of memories from when they recorded the album part of Sydney.
You have to do something. If you guys go through LA or something, get him to come up on stage. Oh,
that'd be wild. It'd just be so ridiculous. And I'd just love to do it just because of, like, I don't know about you guys with Cryptopsy, but you know, there's always a section of your supporters, like the people who listen to your music, who are just way too serious. Like they're just
98% of my fan base. Yes,
and we've certainly got a lot of that. I mean, playing ultimately what we're playing is, like, you know, very much heavy metal, traditional metal, a bit of power metal, that sort of stuff. And so we've got a lot of the Denim Warriors, the back patches, all that kind of stuff, which is totally cool. Like, I love that stuff, but you know, they're pretty hard down the line with what they like and what they don't like. And I would just love to have a moment like that where you'd have like this pop icon get on stage to sing a pop song that we've covered and just look out to the crowd and see the guys in the denim jackets just like...
They're going to sing along. That's the worst part. Yeah. Yeah. All of them, even the biggest warriors, are they know the words to that song. They can't help themselves.
Just mumbling it under their breath.
Cryptopsy could never cover Savage Garden, though. We would never get away with it.
Never say never, man. Never say never.
You've been very busy. Lord is doing a bunch of stuff. The podcast has been killing it. But I'm wondering, how have you been filling the void of performing live?
Yeah, it's been tough. I think we've certainly slowed down over the past several years pre-pandemic with the volume of touring that we were doing. It was just getting harder for a number of different reasons. You know, just everyone getting a bit older, families, kids, you know, the usual domesticated stuff that we tend to have come into our lives as we get older. So the start of the pandemic, it was a bit of a blessing in a way, because to begin with, we started turning down shows at the beginning of 2020 for reasons that were outside of our control. Pandemic hadn't even been a thing yet. And I was kicking myself. I'm like, man, we're turning down like international supports in Asia, like going overseas, doing some big shows to tour the last album. And once again, it's like, oh, the 16-year-old me must be just going, Andy, you're an idiot. What are you doing? And then a couple of months later, pandemic hits, everything just starts getting canceled left, right, and center. So we sort of dodged a bullet, and it worked out quite well. And for us, it took the pressure off us, where we could just sort of sit back and, I don't know, clean up the back end and just do a bunch of things that we're meant to be doing. You know, the compilation for the covers release was one thing where we had to go back and, you know, pull out all these songs and clean them up. We were doing some other merch stuff, things that we'd sort of half done and didn't quite complete. We got into that. And I think also personally, I think a lot of us all had things in our lives that we just needed to sort of address and just get back on track, whether it be employment or relationships and all that sort of stuff. So it worked out really well. But towards the end of last year and into the beginning of this year, I mean, for me personally, I can't speak on behalf of the other guys, but I've certainly been getting the itch big time to be playing again. And we've raised it a bunch of times within the band to say, hey, should we start looking at shows at some stage? Like, you know,
because it is allowed now in Australia.
It is. Yeah. Yes and no. We're 2 weeks into a 3-week lockdown again at the moment. So we've got the Delta strain that's just hit us now. So, us. But, but parts of the country are still open. But, as you know, like booking shows, you've got to book so far in advance. And I think it's even worse now because you've got rescheduled tours that are constantly being rescheduled. They're taking priority in some cases, depending on the size of the bands. Everybody wants to get back out. And so there's a lot of competition to get back into the live circuit. But I think luckily the guys have sort of brought me back to earth and just said, just wait,
just wait until everything's been sorted. Wait until there's vaccines everywhere and people have sorted themselves out. Wait until there's no uncertainty about, especially here, like, you know, so our state that we're in Sydney, we're in lockdown, borders are closed. So I can't go to Melbourne. I can't go to Brisbane. So if you've got an interstate show, then that's cancelled. You can't do it anymore. So we're seeing a lot of that at the moment, a lot of cancelled, postponed tours. So I think for us, as frustrating as it is, we're probably taking the best approach by just sitting on our hands and just going, just wait a bit longer and we'll get back out there. But it's been a good excuse to just to try and look around you and see, well, what are the other things I've been meaning to do? What's some, like, do I need to clean the house? Do I need to go and exercise? Do I need to go and do something just to get my life in order? The things that I've neglected because I put a lot of time and effort into being in a band, which I've been doing since my late teens.
I thought you were going to say reading.
Oh, hey, man.
I follow you too on social, so I know you read a lot. So,
lots of books, man.
Let's wrap this up with one last question. Classic Vox and Hops wrap up question. It probably doesn't happen to you very often, especially not this month because you're doing a dry July. But every once in a while, it happens to everyone. What is your hangover cure?
Well, there's a couple of things. If I've got clarity of mind at the end of the night, then I'll try and swig a bottle of like Gatorade or something like that, trying to get the hydration going in advance. But the next day, honestly, it's just sleep. And I've got some vitamin C tablets that I sort of put into water and have that. Or if I've got some Gatorade and like some hydrolytes or something like that, I'll have. But to be honest, man, like, you know, sometimes it just doesn't matter what you do. If you've gone hard that day before, that night before, whatever it is, if you're having some of those 8%ers, oh man, it's you can throw everything at the wall. I don't think a lot's going to stick. You're just going to have to ride it out. And unfortunately, my poor wife will just have to cop it with my whinging all day, lying on the couch and going, oh, I'm dying.
Amazing. Andy, thank you so much for taking the time, having a chat with me, talking about your life, music, and craft beer. I truly appreciate it. Everyone, go check out that new Lord EP, Undercover Volume 1. It's full of bangers, including that amazing Savage Garden cover. Andy, thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Hey, thank you all so, so much for listening right to the end. You know that I love and appreciate that. Man, did I ever have a great time hanging out with Andy. We really kicked it off and just totally connected when I was on the Andy Social podcast, so I knew that we were in for a great, great conversation during this chat, and I was absolutely right, and I am looking forward to hanging out with Andy again. Check out that new Lord, listen to some Andy Social podcast episodes. Trust me, you will not be disappointed. If you enjoyed this Vox and Hops episode, you should sign up to the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast mailing list. You can do that by going to my website, voxandhops.com. That's voxandhops.com. And when you do that, you shall receive one email a week containing all of the details of everything that has happened throughout the past week in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast, including all the details for any episodes which I dropped throughout that past week, if I have been a guest on someone else's podcast, any pertinent information for any cool projects that I have in the works, as well as the updated links to the Thirsty Thursday virtual hangs, and the updated links to the Brutal Awakenings playlist, the monthly playlist that is curated by my man Jerry Monk, the metal architect himself, and is available on both Apple Music and Spotify. So please do me the favor of signing up to this mailing list, because there's just so much going on in the world of the Vox and Hops Metal Podcast. I would hate for you to miss a single thing. The Vox and Hops Metal Podcast is brought to you by Sound Talent Media. I have one more episode coming up this Friday, but until then, remember to enjoy life, metal, and craft beer. Cheers, Vox and Hops hits.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.